include both deaf and hearing members. It's been a custom for a long time at the Folklife Festival to celebrate family folklore, the family, that basic group of people that develops traditions, develops very close traditions together, nicknames, water throwing, whatever you like. And today we have the special privilege of being able to get an idea of the traditions that develop within families whose members are all or partially deaf. And we have people with several different kinds of life experiences, work experiences that bear on that kind of question. I won't talk any longer. I will just ask our participants in turn to introduce themselves, to tell you their names, where they come from, what they do when they're not at the Folklife Festival, and then we'll begin telling some stories. Would you begin?
My name is Barbara Canapel. I'm from Washington, D.C., and I work at Gallaudet College as a linguist specialist working with a group of people developing materials at Gallaudet College. Name is Bill Ennis. Make sure that he can read me. I live in Greenbelt, Maryland. And there's a woman behind the interpreter now. I work for the USDA as a programmer. My name is Lily Burke. I live in Greenbelt, Maryland also. I'm a neighbor of Bill. And really, I'm originally from New York. I moved around, now I live here, and I work for the government at the Veterans Administration.
Do you mind if I stand up? I simply cannot talk when I'm sitting on my hands. I'm Don Pettinger, director of the demonstration programs at Gallaudet College, adult education. And I better introduce you right now to a deaf man and his microphone. That's gonna drive you crazy. It does me too, because every once in a while when I get excited, I start slapping it, pulling around with it, and it makes all kinds of noise.
Thank you. I'd like to start things off today by asking a couple of questions of these people. After that, I think you all should feel free to ask questions or to share your own experiences if you like. I'd like to start asking each of these participants in turn to tell you a little bit about deaf and hearing members in their family, what the family structure was like, and how they communicated at home in the family with one another. Barbara, would you like to begin?
All right. First, my sister was born in deaf parents. She's about 5 years older than I am, and she's a hearing person. That means she was the only hearing person in the whole deaf family. Next, I was born, and I was born deaf to deaf parents. And also, I have a deaf uncle and aunt and another aunt. That's five in terms of deaf relatives in my family. And I always consider them as all the family, all during my life, growing up. We shared all in the same house and so forth. And when my dad was gone to work, I'd run down to see my uncle downstairs and watch my uncle help other deaf people. Often deaf people would come to see my uncle for help, so forth, and I would see so many different people. How we communicate in the family? We use sign language. We talk that way all the time. And as soon as I was born, that's what I saw all my life growing up, until I was about four. I was really puzzled at that time because my parents were considering sending me to an oral school. Decided to send me to a special class for deaf children in a public school. So I went. It was a different kind of experience. You know what the oral program means? It means that I was not allowed to use sign language in the oral school. They did not allow it. In the special class, the teacher wanted us to behave like we were hearing children, to behave that way, not to behave like we were deaf people. When we went into that school, that oral school, we had to learn how to talk, how to lip read, how to use the amplification system, that type of thing. When I'd come home, I'd use sign language. I went to school, I couldn't use sign language at all. Often, when the teacher would be looking, writing on the blackboard or looking away, I would teach the other kids how to sign to the other deaf students, you know, behind her back. And I was like that for 6 years. While that 6 years of oral school, I'd come home, my parents would be signing, my sister hadn't learned signs yet. She was trying to be a speech therapist for me, so to speak. She'd sit down, like when I was four, she'd be eight or so, and she'd be trying to help me to teach, hold my side of my throat and my side of my face, and it was really boring. I couldn't stand it. I want to go out and play. Using sign language in the family, I believe using some American Sign Language and some signed English, and I see how my parents, they're deaf, how they communicated with my hearing sister. I'd watch them. They'd use sign and speak and sign at the same time, so I would be able to follow their conversation. I'd be listening in, and you know, in a way, it'd be like deaf speech, used to their voice. But my parents did not use their voice when they went out in public and with the hearing people. But in the family, yes, they did. Looking back, I'm puzzled that my sister did not learn sign. She should have become an expert interpreter. And I asked her recently why she didn't learn it. She said, well, I thought we communicated fine in the family. I was good at fingerspelling and homemade signs. So that was interesting. I guess that's enough for me.
Thank you very much. Bill, would you like to tell us a little bit about your family?
Well, it's really a rough time. I really enjoy those Indian drums.
I don't know why they put us next to the Indians. Possibly they thought it wouldn't bother us. But I think it's one of the few things that a great many of our deaf participants can hear, right? Can you feel that?
Yes. Getting responses, yes, yes.
Okay, Bill, go right ahead.
Well, Barbara's saying I have to speak louder than the drums. He says, my parents were hearing. They learned to sign. My mom is an interpreter. I have two brothers. One is here who's interpreting, is my one of my brothers. He's a member of the Registry of Interpreters for the Deaf. And then I have another brother who's deaf. I guess when I was about five or six, my parents began to learn signs. At that time, she was a PTA president, encouraged to set up a sign language class for parents who had deaf children. That was back in 1951, 52, somewhere about 53. I think that was pretty unusual, perhaps unheard of, for them to be signing at that time in the home. Now, one thing I do remember a story very well, when I guess I had some kind of problem in that I was deaf. I wanted to join a little league baseball team for the summer. And I thought, man, I was a fantastic baseball player. I just felt I was a good athlete. But my problem was when I wanted to join the team, I thought, what about, I asked my mom if I get John, make him come with me. So my mom decided to encourage both of us to go. We drove over to the field, and I saw all those boys going over there for the tryout. I decided, John got out of the car, and I decided I don't want to go. I felt to go all through those problems of communication, and I just hated everybody staring at me, maybe looking at me as if I was something different. I was having all these problems with that. My mom said, get out, go play baseball, go on. You wanted to play, go on. I said, yeah, I did, but I think I'd really go home. Take me home. Mother finally pushed me and then got her foot up on the seat and shoved me out of the car. And I was saying, what in the world are you doing, Mom, wait. She shut the door and took off. And I guess I'm really grateful for that, of course, now. It was rough then. My little brother had, I was following him. I'd get in front of him and lead him over there to the tryouts. We made it, and we had everything worked out real well. Not long ago, I was talking to my mom about those old days. And I said, do you remember that you had to push me out? She says, oh, no, I never did anything like that. I said, yes, I remember you pushed me out of the car. Mom started thinking about it. She says, yes, yes, I guess I really do remember. It really hurt me to do that to you. It made me cry all the way home. But I was really, I told her I was really glad you did that because it was that was a very good. We had a good old time playing baseball.
Thank you very much. That was a fine story. Lily, would you like to share something with us about your family? Yeah, sure. Please stand up if you feel more comfortable.
I have a deaf family like Barbara's. Deaf parents, deaf sister, deaf uncle, and one grandmother's hearing. The rest of us are all deaf. She's an outcast, I guess. I don't know. But went to a deaf school in Europe. Vienna, Austria, was raised there. Then the war came, broke out, and all our family got together and came to America. We had a hard time getting into America because the four of us deaf. That time the United States was a little in the midst of a war between Europe and the U.S. And then they have take the responsibility of bringing in four deaf immigrants. Finally, we got into the United States. My mom and my uncle were working, and I got into school, and it was an oral school. Some people ask me, why, if you have a deaf family, did you go to an oral school? Because my parents didn't know much about it, really. They didn't know any better. So people said, this is a good school, a real good school. Oral school's good, so my parents said, okay, we'll put them in there. I knew German at home and German Sign Language. Because I got into school, and went there, and I learned English, and I taught my parents, my mother, I would sometimes teach her the signs. My family did not have any problem communicating at home, but at school it was really tough with the oral. And I had deaf friends who could sign that I would hang around with. I guess that's all.
Thank you. Don, how about you?
I lost my hearing when I was 5 from German measles. There was no psychological impact. Because my father was very hard of hearing, and I had 8 brothers and sisters. And every time I started feeling sorry for myself, because my brothers and sisters were picking on me, and I was picking on me because I'm deaf. And my brothers and sisters would say, you're so what? You're deaf, so what? And I grew up with a very healthy attitude about my deafness. But my mother never really accepted my deafness. You know how mothers are. She was always trying to find ways to get my hearing back. I remember when I was little, they took me to a doctor, some witch doctor who used snake oil in my ear. And then those Indians over there remind me of something else. They took me out to the Indian reservation and had the medicine man trying for my hearing back. Obviously, it didn't work. They took me to a chiropractor. There I was, 6 years old, and I didn't know what was going on. I didn't understand. Finally, as a last resort, I had an aunt in California who convinced my family that if I went to California and spent the summer in faith healing, that I would get my hearing back. So they sent me to Los Angeles and to that big church, the Amy Semple McPherson First Christ Church in Los Angeles. The first Sunday, I couldn't ask questions because there were too many people. Then the Monday morning, I had to go to the church and go into the classroom and be prayed over, and I was sitting there. And all of a sudden, one man jumped up and got down on the floor, started rolling around. I was shaking with courage. I poked the guy next to me. What's the matter with him? And my fellow said, oh, He's filled with the Holy Spirit. I didn't want any of that. So every morning I would get up and I would dress and I would go head for the church, but I never went back. I began to roam the whole city of Los Angeles. A little boy, 8 years old. Boy, that was a wonderful experience. Now, 24, I learned about other people's God and my God. That church had a huge revival, fundraising revival. And I was trained to get up on the stage before a microphone and say, "Praise the Lord, praise the Lord. I can hear better than I did." And I got my first standing ovation, 5,000 strong. And I couldn't hear a bit better. But I know today that I hope that church raised about $100,000 that night. So all kinds of things happen to deaf children growing up. And when you have a marvelous sense of humor, it sure helps.
Thank you. Of course, you were probably luckier than some people, Don, with hearing parents. Sounds as if your parents and your family were more understanding than some kinds of hearing parents. Barbara Canepo, our participant here on this side, is a founder of a very unusual organization which has done a lot of good work with parents of deaf children. I wonder if you might tell us a little bit about your work and about what you've discovered about the attitudes of hearing parents of deaf children.
Organization, which is founded by three people, the three women, myself as a deaf person, a hearing person, and a mother of a deaf son, the three of us realized that we need to establish an organization, because there was many organizations out there, like an organization for parents, organization for deaf people, organization for professional workers with the deaf, and so forth, but we needed none of it all came together, and we wanted to establish a group called Deaf Pride. So through that Deaf Pride, we've learned a lot about working with families. I realized that growing up and socializing with deaf people all my life, I never really experienced socializing with hearing people. Very little. Until I met this hearing person and introduced me to the mother of a deaf son, I began to communicate with them, and the mother was like hungry, starved for more information. How did deaf people feel? I was asking questions, and I explained all about my different feelings of deafness growing up and so forth. I realized that, really, deaf people growing up are very active in different organizations and so forth, but never really worked with families who have deaf children. I realized that deaf people just leave it to the professionals and have the professionals to take care of the people and the parents and so forth, and the deaf have just stood back for so long. So I decided to set up a workshop to bring together families of deaf children and deaf people at the workshop, which was very successful. And a lot of deaf people were sharing with the parents, and the parents were sharing with them. And, remember, the first deaf person's parents, the first time hearing people meet a deaf person is really their own child, and they never really know how to deal with it. And they ask the professionals how, and they learn from them, learn to talk, learn to use hearing aids, and not very much more than that, other than socialize with deaf people, tell them they have their own culture, their own clubs, but they just focus on the speech, and that's all. Being there and some other deaf people there to share their feelings, the parents really felt much better about themselves. They had a lot of questions to ask, like one mother asked a deaf person, "Why does my son scream in the bathroom? Why?" And we laughed. We laughed about that, because I've had that experience before. In my dormitory at the residential school, I'd get real close to the wall and just holler in the bathroom, and I could hear the echoes all around in the bathroom. Maybe that boy was learning and experiencing that in the bathroom. Shut the door and just holler, and then he could hear and feel the echoes bouncing off the bathroom wall. That's one example. Just sharing. I can see myself as a valuable resource to the parents of deaf children, and also the parents are a valuable resource to us, and the exchange is good. The philosophy we believe is that each one has value, and each to offer of their, and all their experiences are important. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, one thing that deaf people can offer to hearing people is some experience of what deafness is like. I'm constantly surprised how many hearing adults I meet who have never in their lives met a deaf person, among other things. Deafness seems to be not only invisible, but very private in some ways. And when you belong to a family where most of the people are deaf, as for instance in your case, Lily's, sometimes you develop kinds of folk traditions that, they're different from the kinds of things that hearing families have to develop. I wonder if you could tell people about your uncle's inventions, the way he invented a doorbell in Austria for your family, and maybe some traditions in your family, maybe the rest of you want to add to this too, about how you hear a baby when it cries at night. If you're deaf, how do you maintain a deaf family? Some problems I think people don't often think about. Could you tell us the story of your uncle's doorbell?
Yeah, the doorbell, all right. One of my Tom's favorite stories over there. When I was little, I remember looking back. Today, as you know, that we have doorbells when we come to our home and it flashes a light. There's no problem with that. Now, as I look back, I remember that when I was little, my hearing grandmother always would hear for us. She was our ears for us, so to speak, all the time. One time my grandmother had to go somewhere. My family were all deaf. We couldn't hear. My uncle said to me, "I expect someone to come that afternoon. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? We won't hear him knocking on the door." So we thought, okay, we tied and made a connection through the door outside and put a string under the door and tied it to a chair in the living room. A long string, very strange looking thing. And we played around and we were very curious as to what would happen. Sometime later, the big boom and vibration in that chair was bouncing across the floor. Somebody was at the door. And we were all excited, and we ran and opened the door, and sure enough, somebody was there at the door. What they did, they saw the string. There was a little sign that said, "Please pull the string on the outside of the door." And so they started pulling it, and it bounced that chair across the floor. I remember it was so exciting to feel, and we had such a good feeling about that. And I remember, we have baby criers that we call, a little device that it has a microphone by the bed, and then it goes and it blinks a light when there's crying. That's no problem. But in the past, my mother said, "You are lucky that you have that today." Back when I was raising you, we always had to get up. My grandmother would get up and wake up the mother and say, your baby's crying. Or if there's anybody around to alert her, she'd go and she'd tie a string on the baby's arm and tie it to her arm. And so when the baby started moving, she'd say, well, then she knew the baby was waking up. Or she put her hand on the baby's bed and fall asleep there, and then when the baby started rolling around, would feel the vibration and wake up. I had two hearing children. I have four children. Two are hearing and two are deaf. And I always feel good to have that rich experience.
Thank you. Let's stop at this point and see if anyone in the audience would like to share an experience or ask a question of our participants. Yes. you mean printing machines? Are deaf people learning to operate electronic printing machines? Is that your question? Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Who would like to answer
yes.
that?
Yes. Can you answer that?
Okay, Don.
When one door closes, another always opens. I remember years ago when I was a rehab counselor and the push button factories came along, we were all worried about what deaf people would do. When the linotype went out, I was a printer. When the linotype went out, deaf people proved they were wonderful code type taped up. So, also, when the push button factories came along, at first people thought deaf people could not be programmers. But it turned out to some of the best because they just figured I had very analytical minds and they just figured out why. So, yes, deaf people are getting more and more involved in electronic things.
Mm-hmm. Lily, do you have something you want to add?
You know, many deaf people work at the Washington Post. They're not worried because they're preparing the linotype is being phased out and they're going to the TTS, the machines, what they call cold type. And they've been trained on them, gone to school. It's not a problem.
In fact, Bill, you're a computer programmer, right? At your work, maybe...
Yes.
If you don't mind going a bit off the topic of families, maybe you could talk a little bit about how you get along at your work as a programmer and as a deaf person. Any problems there, or how do you manage?
Well, not really. I never saw that as a problem as a computer programmer. Let's see, counting. There are 9 people that work in that office, 2 are deaf. So that leaves 6, let's see, 4 out of the other 6 know sign language. My supervisor is very good at it, at signing. So the communication really is not a problem there at the work. Usually a lot of it's written down, written instructions on the jobs that have to be done. They're put on my desk, and then I take care of it from there. Often the other 2 deaf workers there, they're programmers, they're senior programmers, and they've helped me out a lot when I wasn't sure how to get the work done. I'd go to them and ask, what do I do now? And the other deaf programmers would help me, working with COBOL, writing using COBOL.
Do you also teach sign language at your work, don't you?
Oh, yes. Yes.
So you've helped a number of your hearing co-workers also, right?
Yeah.
Are there other questions from the audience? Yes. The question is, can you sign in other languages or is there a universal sign language?
It's different. ASL and the German Sign Language is totally different. Different signings. The movements may be similar, but it's different signing. And, you know, some people are developing a new book on trying to develop a universal sign language that someday the book may come out and then people could use that to sign together. But right now, I know that the German Sign Language is totally different. For example, in American Sign Language for mother, you use this sign, father, that way. In German, it's mother, father. This way, mother, mother. Mother. Oh, mother is that way. Mother this way, father this way, father. And for German is like that, father. Similar movements there. Baby would be the same, but the sign language is totally different. My family, my mother, as I watch her, I think she used GSL, German ASL, that kind of thing.
Thank you. Are there other questions?
My parents and I became deaf when I was 3 years old. My brother was the first one born. He had normal hearing. And I was the second, I was the second born hearing, and I became deaf when I was 3. My sister was born, she had normal hearing. Okay, but with my mother, before the children were born, for the doorbell, she bought a dog. And she depended on the dog all the time. When the doorbell or when the dog would move or something, she would know that someone was at the door. So she would depend on the dog. When my brother was born, she did the string like Lily's mother did. And at night, if it pulled. Then when I was born, my brother would just wake me up or wake her up or say the baby's crying or something. A long time ago, you used to leave the door open all day and all night so someone could just walk in without knocking. It's different from today. Someone can break in your house even if you lock the door. But now they have the electronic devices. But a long, long time ago, you just left your doors open and anyone could come in. They just didn't go upstairs, but they would just walk in the house and wait for you to come down like that. But as my brother was growing up, my mother was never with the dog. She would use the dog during the day, most of the time, just depending on the dog, before the electronic things came about.
Thank you very much for sharing that with us. We wouldn't leave our houses open today. I think we have time perhaps for one last question or one last comment, and then we're going to have to close. Any more? Well, thank you very much. I'd like to thank our participants first for sharing their experiences with us. I'd like to thank you. And I'd like to invite any of you in who's interested to join our class in American Sign Language, an introduction to how you actually sign, in our other tent, which will be beginning in just a couple of minutes. Well, please come and visit us there. This is our last program in this tent for today. We open up again at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning. Thank you.